ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय
ॐ
नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय
ॐ
नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय So, page 87 or 86, whatever the starting the fifth chapter. So this is question 34, 5.1. The pratigya, solemn statement of purpose of this chapter, entitled "The Cause of All Causes," is expressed in these sentences from the beginning of Srila Prabhupada's purport to verse 6. The perfection of the parampara system, or the path of disciplic succession, is further confirmed. In the previous chapter, it has been established that Brahmaji, the firstborn living entity, received knowledge directly from the Supreme Lord, and Nimisha, now at the start of this chapter, the same knowledge was imparted to Narada, the next disciple. Narada asked to receive the knowledge, and Brahmaji imparted it upon being asked. Therefore, asking for transcendental knowledge from the right person and receiving it properly is the regulation of the disciplic succession. We note here that Prabhupada put the emphasis on how that knowledge is being asked for and received. It means, of course, there is the qualification of the guru, there's the qualification of the disciple. But the active principle will be how that is received. It means if the disciple doesn't have the proper attitude, and then there's no use to giving it. Right? So nowadays, so much emphasis is being put on the qualification of guru, which is important. But along with that, there's equally as high standards for disciple, and there's also equally high standards of how the two interact, meaning how the disciple acts with guru, not just how guru acts with disciples. Right? Does he take a dakshin? What does he do with that dakshin? Does he have a vyas puja? What does he do during that vyas puja? Okay, that's one element that's discussed amongst the senior Vaishnavas themselves. It's not a discussion for the general public. If they want to hear, fine. But how the disciple should, what is the qualification of the disciple, how the disciple should act, that then is the common discussion. So Prabhupada, we see here that in this he's mentioned the, even though they are perfect, you have a perfect guru, Lord Brahma, perfect disciple, Narad Muni, but what's important is that he asked to receive it, and Brahmaji imparted it upon being asked. Okay? Does that make sense? So that is it. That's the problem. Therefore, asking for transcendental knowledge means that's what the disciple has to do. From the right person means they have to be qualified. And receiving it properly, then what you have to do after that is a regulation. Right? Does that make sense? So that is the balanced picture. Is you have to take into it the consideration of all. Right? So So we can see here is that would mean that the continuation of the succession is therefore based upon training. Otherwise, how do you get appropriate disciples? Appropriate disciples, then they inquire appropriately, receive that knowledge, then they become the next gurus. Right? And then through that training, the next line of disciples is created who inquire and receive it properly and apply it, and then it continues on. Does that make sense? Right? It's not a matter of, how you say? It's not an administrative, means administration is important, but the disciplic succession is not the administrative ruling. Does that make sense? The disciplic succession is two trained persons interacting on the basis of knowledge. Or one is giving and one is receiving. Does that make sense? So that's if one wants to see that that process is working properly, then it's training, not administration. Does that make sense? 5.2. Chapter 5, The Cause of All Causes, Adhyaya Prakash, Ika, the chapter at a glance, Nimesha. As it was in the study guide for Chapter 3 of this canto, the Adhyaya Prakashika, for Chapter 5 is less the chapter at a glance and more an outline of the chapter's logical structure, a structure that very well may be hidden from the reader as they get absorbed in the detailed information culled from the verses as presented in section 5.3 that will follow, the Sloka Nisharanam. I like that. S/he. Is it that then? She/he. I generally work it into one or they, or, you know, put it into third person, you know, then avoid such. But I like it. In reply to Maharaj Parikit, Sukadev Goswami narrates how Narad Muni humbly approaches Brahmadev, offering his obeisances to the firstborn, Purvaja, among embodied beings, who is verily Narad's father and spiritual preceptor. At the lotus feet of his Gurudev, Narada's wish is for personal instruction in Atma Tattva, the truth of the individual soul and the supersoul. In pursuit of this, he asks Brahma about the cosmic manifestation, its symptoms, its fundament, how it is created, etc. Moving on in his inquiry, Narada directs questions to the person of Brahma himself. His father's austerity suggests to Narada that Brahma draws his knowledge and power from a creator superior to himself. Right? In other words, he's come to him to find out what's going on. So he asks how this universe is created, how it functions. That he knows his father's created it. So he wants to know in detail how it, what's going on. But at the same time, as he also, after that, notices that in the process of him explaining it, and it means his personal behavior in the explanation, and his behavior explanation. Does that make sense? You know, he mentions how he did tapasya for so many thousands of years, like this. That's one thing. And then now also he sees that he meditates on someone else. So then he inquires about that, is that you've created everything, but it appears you're drawing from someone else. Otherwise, why do you have to meditate? Why do you have to offer your respects elsewhere? Brahma replies that his respectable position as a powerful authority is meaningful only because he is able to see into the prowess of the Almighty Personality of Godhead. Unless one is similarly aware of the Lord, he is sure to be illusioned. For example, by wrongly supposing Brahma, the demigod of secondary creation, Visarga, to be the ultimate creator. Brahma reveals that the source of his creative power is the effulgence that shines forth from the Lord's spiritual form. There, before that form, the power of illusion is ashamed of her service to the Lord, which is to bewilder the foolish souls who think in nonsensical terms of it is I and it is mine. My endeavor takes precedence over Krishna's control. Yet in their different ways, aesthetic, atheistic modern scientists, the Shaktas, who worship female forms of material energy, nature, and the Mayavadi philosophers, all act as agents of Maya in this world because they propagate the same wrong conclusion. She is the cause of all causes. This falsehood is entertained by those jivas who, unwilling to face the Lord, hide in the shadow at his back. Those who come out of the shadow into the light of Vedic knowledge understand Brahma to be, in the matter of creation, the principal servant of the Supreme. Brahma does not hide the Lord's commanding role behind false claims of I and mine. Therefore, for genuine knowledge about the origin of the cosmos, there is no better source than Brahma among all jivas. Yeah. So it's by seeing Krishna in one's service that actually that ability to perform the service increases. Right? Whether you're technically seeing or just knowing that Krishna is behind one's ability. You know, either way, either from that the emotional or from the, you know, technical, then one actually sees things as they are. Then one can move forward. Otherwise, then it doesn't work. If one claims that I am doing it or the result is mine, then one is bound by that service. One's not free. So Brahmaji doesn't do that. Therefore, he's the perfect one to approach. Right? And then we see that those who don't, they don't even see the Supreme Lord. They only see Maya itself and think it's supreme in its own creation and destruction. Right? I mean, one might say, well, no, they're just scientists. But actually, they are Shaktas because they're not doubting how the world can create itself. Right? It means all the elements are there. Whatever it is, if it's a big bang or it's a big implosion or whatever happened, you know, they're not doubting that. They're not saying that it can't be. Right? So they're taking it that the material energy is itself independent to do as it pleases. And they're considering as it pleases to be, what is that, random, I mean, there's terms they use that just means happening by chance. But actually, that happening by chance means that it is the prerogative of free will of the material energy to do so. Does that make sense? Right? Otherwise, how could it happen by chance? It means somebody has to be directing it. So that the material energy is doing it means that she is the absolute authority. Therefore, whatever she does is correct. You know, and then by our perspective, it's called chance because they're not seeing the person. But technically, they're Shaktas because all they see is earth, water, fire, air, ether. So they're not even very advanced Shaktas. The Mayavadis are a touch more advanced because they see mind, intelligence, false ego, and, you know, this Brahman like that. But otherwise, they're... Brahman now glorifies Lord Vasudev, Nimesha. Vasudev is the first of four forms, Chaturvyuha, of Mahanarayana, who is Krishna as the Lord of Vaikuntha, whose divine energy expands as the primary elements of creation. Initially, these ingredients lay inert with him upon the Mahatattva in a state of disassembly. The first Purusha, Mahavishnu, Nimisha, Shankarshan of the Chaturvyuha, sends forth Kala, the time factor, Nimisha, time. Among the creative ingredients that emanate from the Lord is the foremost representative of the Lord. 22nd purport, quote, as such, Kala may be taken as the first cause of all creation, end quote. Agitated by time, the ingredients of the Mahatattva interact to produce further creations as supervised by the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Acknowledging his authority over creation as supreme, Brahma offers his obeisances to Lord Narayana as Jagat Guru. By his purposeful involvement in creation, he manifests his mercy in various auspicious ways so that inquisitive jivas can come to know him. The Vedas, the demigods, the different planets, sacrifice, meditation, austerity, transcendental knowledge, and ultimate salvation are given by him only for the revival of God consciousness. In here, it means we've heard all these different things, the different planets, the demigods, the Vedas. It's just like you mention, let us say you are mentioning prominent persons. You know, there's this person, there's that person. In the assembly, then there's this person, that person, all these things. Everybody in the assembly is connected to those persons. The person's clothes are connected to them. You know, back at their room, their toothbrush and toothpaste is connected to them. So many things are connected, but we don't mention that. So just because only these things are mentioned doesn't mean that that is all there is. Does that make sense? When Krishna creates, that all these have come from him. It's all, these are the prominent, right? So by focusing on these, then you can understand that connecting all this to Krishna then will connect, help you connect everything in your life to him. Right? Does that make sense? Otherwise, we tend to think, okay, all those are spiritual, then there's my life. Right? The whole idea of this second canto is to get one over that concept that there's my spiritual life and then there's my practical life. Right? The whole idea is the two of them have to be combined. That your spiritual life has to be practical and your practical life has to be spiritual. And it's not a compromise in any way. It's actually a step forward. Right? So because we see is that that has to be cleared before the 10th canto. Otherwise, there's going to be my ecstasy in hearing about Krishna and the gopis, and my absorption in this and that, so many nice little things from their pastimes. And then there's going to be my practical life, how I'm going to get lunch today and get some clothes, and my interaction with other people that I have to deal with. So that's not supposed to be there. So this is one of the first things to cross, is the engagement of the Vedic in the Lord's service, right? It means they have the Bhagavats the highest. The Pancharatrik is basically the transcendental that's been formalized for the understanding of the conditioned soul. Then you have the Vedic, which means formalizing the material concepts and needs of the conditioned soul. Right? So we're dealing with the lowest first. We're showing how that, even though it's the lowest, is the most complex for us. Right? Therefore, how to connect that nicely to Krishna's service through understanding the origin of everything that there is in your life. Does that make some sense? So now we're getting seriously. Maharaj mentioned at the beginning of this canto that now is when we start very seriously getting to the study of the Chaturvyuha. Because the Chaturvyuha is how this is working. Because you have four kinds of ego, right? The ego of polluted consciousness, that I am God, right? So if I'm God, means I'm the one who performs all the pastimes. That's Vasudeva, right? That the false ego of I am what I consider my world, right? The things and situations of my world. You know, everything, my house, my family, my car, my possessions, my money, my position, my body, what it looks like, all this, that's the illusion of Sankarsha. Right? And the ego that goes along with this attitude. Then you have Prajumna, is the attraction to those items and or attraction to the interaction of those items of your world. Right? That gives life to it. Otherwise, it's just dead matter. That's Prajumna. So that takes intelligence. That includes the senses. And then Aniruddha, which is then the end result that you want to gain from that interaction of that field of Sankarshan and the experience that is gained in that result. So that is still only operated by Vasudeva. Right? It means Vasudeva connects the field through activity to your result. Right? The field has relations. Field is there, Sankarshan. It's relations, the desire to operate those relations, Prajumna, the desire to get the result of those relations, Aniruddha. But that only happens because of Prajumna. I mean, of Vasudeva. Right? So as soon as we stop thinking we're God, then we take part in God's pastimes rather than they're our own pastimes. Right? So it's a very actually essential understanding to this. Right? Of all the metaphysics that are there, it can be very complex. But if you can understand this one, then it is simple enough to apply very nicely without getting too academic. But at the same time, it's completely comprehensive. Like that. You know, so it's a very nice, this is how the Vaishnavas approach the metaphysics of their world. Shaktas will break it down into all the different Bhura Bhuvaswa and all these different things, but still we can put them into the same categories as our own identification. But they prefer others that are not connected with the Lord. So this is our method. Yes.
Yeah, this point will also be brought up more in the next part, Shloka Sharma. But here it's mentioned, Brahma offers obeisances to Lord Narayan as Jagat Guru. So we should understand that this term, Jagat Guru, refers to the Lord. Mm-hmm. And Srila Prabhupada expressly did not appreciate, he did not like the devotees to, Jaya Jagat Guru Srila Prabhupada. He didn't like that.
No.
And, I mean, a few days ago, last time I went to the temple, I heard some devotee singing just that.
Yeah, yeah. No, he didn't.
It's just wacky. Yeah. Yeah.
When it goes to the Lord, also
the spiritual master of the whole universe is the Lord.
Yeah, it's the Lord.
Know? And this is Brahma. I mean, you might wonder, well, Brahma, you know, he creates the universe, but he's offering obeisances to Narayan as the Jagat Guru. He specifically addresses him by that term. Mm-hmm. So even Brahma, as a jiva, the foremost jiva, who takes, you know, who's in charge of the Visarga, but as he will tell Narada, and probably will confirm, actually the Lord's doing everything. By the Sarga, he's doing everything. And I'm, you know, just filling in the little spots here and there as his servant.
Putting in the lines, right? Connect the dots.
So, this is actually an offense. This is why, because there are actually some Shaivite lines that are explained to have broken off from the Vishnu Swami Rudra Sampradaya a long time ago. Maybe Shaiva Siddhanta, there's one called Shaiva Siddhanta. There's Vira Shaiva, Shaiva Siddhanta. Anyway, but they started off as Vaishnavas, but they were addressing their Sampradaya Acharya, Lord Shiva, you know, as Jagat Guru. Eventually he became God for them. And this is a great offense to glorify the spiritual master in an inappropriate way. So we should keep this in mind.
Yeah. Also, there's that, just the, and the social connotation along with it is that the Mayavadis always use Jagat Guru.
Yeah.
You know, so therefore, just from that point, you wouldn't want to use it because the Mayavadis use it. You know, so I like that.
Yeah, and for the same reason, because they think they're God.
They don't think they're God,
yeah.
Yeah, actually, that's the point, isn't it?
That's the point.
The point is God's Jagat Guru. Yeah.
And I can't understand why so many years later.
Because they didn't hear.
It's like I couldn't believe it the other day when I heard this, you know, like, because I know it's been said again and again and again and again, but I guess it doesn't get through.
No, the idea is the sentiment that Prabhupada's, you know, the greatest spiritual master, so therefore we should use the greatest nomenclature, but that one's specifically used for God, so, you know. Like that. Probably gives terms that you use. He said Prabhupada, Vishnupada, these are the terms.
Yeah.
We don't use Jagat Guru, so like that. My power to create, Brahma admits, is derived from the Lord's original creative energy. In fact, Brahma himself is a creation of the Lord, whose transcendental form exists eternally beyond the three modes of nature. At the same time, the Lord accepts the service of these modes so that the material world may be created, maintained, and destroyed. Like the sky, the Lord gives shelter to the modes, which, like the currents of air, combine in all kinds of direct and indirect ways. Yet, like the sky, the Lord is never affected by the currents of the energy he supports. The individual soul is a tiny offshoot of the Lord's personal spiritual nature. Like the Lord, he too is transcendental to matter, but the jiva is not the Lord. Hence the play of the three modes of material nature may influence him. In particular, if ignorance influences him to misuse his minute free will, in an attempt to control and enjoy material nature as an imitation Lord, he is put by Maya under the conditions of cause and effect. All she is doing is granting the jiva his desire, seeming independence. But what the soul gets from that grant is not really what he expected. Maya's rule obliges him to own the results of his activities. There is no escape from whatever karmic reactions, pleasant or painful, he deserves. Engrossed in forgetfulness, mad after sense gratification, and distressed by material pangs, such souls lose their sense of the constant presence of the Lord, which means they lose sense of all that is truly auspicious in this world. He, however, never forgets his parts and parcels, even when it is time for the cosmic manifestation to be destroyed. He carefully keeps the jivatmas near by merging them in his own spiritual body. So you have the Lord's creative energy. So that is, technically, we see Brahma Samhita describes this as Hiranyagarbha. So the left hand of Mahavishnu, but the left side, that's considered Hiranyagarbha. The right side is Sadashiv. You know, but it's Mahavishnu. So then, that is the mood or the mentality, because it's explained in the TLC that difference between the Lord in Vaikuntha and Lord Vishnu in the material creation is that in Vaikuntha his mood is I am God, but in the material world, then added to that is I am the creator, I am the maintainer, I am the destroyer. So that's three distinct but connected mentalities. So the mentality of the creator, then the expansion of that is Lord Brahma. The expansion of I'm the destroyer then is Shiva. Right? And then Vishnu he is maintaining. He's Kiru Daksha, Garbha Daksha, and Kiru Daksha Vishnu.
What is TLC?
What is the TLC? Teachings of Lord Chaitanya. Right? So he's pointing out that he is like that. So the Lord, because everything's coming from him, therefore he is unaffected by its performance because he's not attached. Right? He's detached. He's the source of the energy. One could think, well, I deal with my dependence, what comes to me, I get entangled in it. That's because we're attached, because we're jivas. We're not independent. Right? We may be taking a masculine role, but technically we're still not independent, like Krishna. But Krishna is independent, so how the energies interact does not affect him. Example given of the sky is not affected by the air that moves. The sky stays the same, whether the air moves peacefully, doesn't move, moves violently, moves in different directions, it's not affected. Does that make sense? Like that. So in here, the jiva forgets the Lord, but the Lord never forgets the jivas. That's very important, because there is an element that we've done wrong, and so then we figure that therefore God must be upset because that's the way I would be. If there was somebody that was supposed to do something for me and didn't do it, I'd get angry with them. I'd throw them out. I'd this, that. So generally we take that as the mood of God. So since we take it that that's the way he is, he will reciprocate like that. But factually, he's just waiting for us to remember who he is, because it's all an illusion anyway. Because we take material energy so seriously because of the reactions of karma, we therefore think then, you know, there's some substance in actually being non-Krishna conscious. Being non-Krishna conscious, the actual reaction is just suffering. Right? And even that's an illusion. We put it on ourselves. But factually, Krishna is just waiting. As soon as you wake up to him, it doesn't matter what's been gone on before, because it was illusion anyway. But now move forward. Right? Does that make sense? So the Lord is very loving, so he's just waiting. Right? So if we take that, then we can move forward. Otherwise what happens is the mode of ignorance may overwhelm our progress forward by feeling so bad for what we've done that we do nothing. But the point is we know we've done wrong, so now we won't do wrong and we move forward. Right? And why is that? Because the Lord, it doesn't bother the Lord, really. Does that make sense? It's a very fine point that has to be dealt with very nicely. Right? It can't be misused. It means, in other words, the Lord's, just like, let's say, you have an authority who's very affectionate, and even though you do things wrong, it doesn't mean you should continue doing wrong. It means that you should think, this person has affection for me, despite my doing wrong. Therefore, for that relationship, I should give up doing the wrong things. That's how you're supposed to use it. But you could think, oh, they'll forgive me anyway, so I just keep on doing. But then that means you're not really recognizing what that affection of the other person means, what kind of relationship actually is there. Right? So that's the illusion. That's the maya. Does that make sense? For a second time, Brahma recounts for Narada the Lord's acts of creation. Now going into greater detail, he speaks of Hiranyagarbha, the Purusha avatar who fathers Brahma, also named Garbhodakshaya Vishnu. Hiranyagarbha and Narayana, the ayana or resting place of the Naras or living entities, this form of the Lord, Nimisha, Prajumna of the Chaturvyuha, is the cause of the gigantic Virat Rup manifestation. Meditation upon the Virat helps a jiva understand that in any material situation, he is ever related to the cause of all causes. If a soul can perfect that relationship before quitting the human form of life, he is invited by the Lord to leave the material sky of temporary planets, including Brahma's own, and to join him in the spiritual sky of transcendental planets. Here play the eternal, all-knowing, and completely blissful internal potencies of the kingdom of God. Right. So then he recounts it again, but then the whole point of recounting it is to bring out this element of going back to Godhead. We see is that in here one may say, well, so much repetition. Like we were just going through the Mahabharata this morning, and one of the stories, I think like Karna having his earrings taken away, comes to three different Parvas. But the angle of it will be different each time. So the first time was showing the Lord's potencies and how it's there and where he comes from in this. This time he's recounting to show how one goes back to Godhead. That makes sense? Because in anything that the Lord does, there's unlimited understandings that can be gained from it. So that's why you'll see repetition is used. One, it's very important. But two, it's a very principal point that so many other points come back to. Does that make sense? So always be very careful in when you're doing any kind of study or research work, that repetition you don't leave aside. Right? That means it's very important. It's a very essential point. So if in your presentation, your linguistic presentation, you can simplify things so it may not come again and again, but you have to present it in such a way that it's understood its importance and its connection with everything else that you're going to list. Does that make sense? So that point. So you can either use this traditional way of just saying it again and again and again, or find some other way, but to get that purpose accomplished. Yeah. Chapter 5, Cause of All Causes, Shloka Anusharanam, verses summary. Instead of directly replying to the three questions Maharaj Pariksit asked in the previous chapter, Sukadeva Goswami refers the king to the inquiry Narad submitted before Brahmadev about the truth of the individual soul and the supersoul. Narada asks many sub-questions about the material world, its background, its creation, and its maintenance. In his submission, Narada already suggests the philosophy of Achinta Bheda Bheda Tattva by employing the example of a spider, the creator, and the web, the creation. The web has no source other than the spider. In a sense, then, spider and web are one. In another sense, the example sustains the functional difference between spider and web. Narada's final questions are for Brahma himself. My dear father, do you create with your own energy? Do you have the help of others? Is there a creator more powerful than you? For how else am I to understand your performance of severe austerities as if pleasing another? Yeah, we had made this point before, is that if there is a very good story or analogy or anything that is given by the previous acharyas, that would always be the preferred, right? Because it's already perfect. Narada's questions are perfect. Brahma's answers are perfect. So the question that is asked, Maharaj Pariksit asks, will be perfectly covered by this discussion. He asks three questions, they will be answered, but through this discussion. Right? And then sometimes we see, by the expertise of such personalities, like Vyasadeva and these great personages, then within that story may be other stories, and within those stories, other stories. So that way then one does not lose one's, interest or enthusiasm. And that way then, through the story form, so many questions can be dealt with and answered, that otherwise, if they were presented technically, might be found to be boring. Right? So it's very nicely done. And then there's pointing out the point that of the oneness and difference of the creator and created. They're not different because one is coming from the other, but at the same time their function is different. Like that, that's important. That even though so the child has come from the parent, so technically they're the same, like we see with Ubhrishava Sutta and Romaharshana Sutta. When Romaharshana was killed, then the sages said, but we blessed Romaharshana that he would have a long life to describe all these Puranas. So then Balaram installed his son, and according to the Vedic rule, the son is non-different from the father. So then in this way, then he is, how do you say? Yeah, there's a non-difference. But at the same time, we see in the relationship between the two, there's a difference in the function. What the father will do, what the son will do, there will be a difference. But technically, they're not different. So that's important because that means the Lord, his energies are different, but at the same time, non-different. But the difference is in their function, means in relationship. The Lord is Vishai, or the enjoyer, and the devotees are the Ashrai, or the enjoyed. Understanding that, relation goes on. The problem is we think we're the Vishai, the enjoyer. Therefore, there's problem. But if we understand we're the Ashrai, the enjoyed, there is no problem. Right? Does that make sense? In a reply, so that was verses 1 to 8, now the 9 to 13. In reply, worthy of the foremost Brahmana in the universe, Brahma tells Narada that the avijja, the souls ignorant of Krishna, who depend upon their frog-like little brains and imperfect senses for knowledge, wrongly conclude that another jiva like them in the role of the demigod of creation or some other powerful position can have full authority over material nature. Well, it means I think I've got control, or at least trying to. So then, to do that, you have to have faith that somebody's got control, right? If Brahma's got control, means that ultimately I could get control. But if nobody's got control, then that kind of like, well, then maybe I have to surrender. Brahma admits that he is able to create only after the Lord has created. And so Brahma offers his obeisances to and meditates upon Vasudeva, Lord Sri Krishna, whose invincible potency, Maya Durjaya, influences the less intelligent to think of the dependent demigod of secondary creation as the independent supreme being. That means Krishna's art means the gross form of it has not been created by Krishna. But the actual form of it, the nature of it, means the inherent nature that cannot be changed in it has already been created. So, as Maharaj pointed out, he just fills in the dots. So that means all he does is fill in that creation with earth, water, fire, air, and ether. You know, that's basically what he's doing. Because everything else has been done by the Lord. So the gross manifestation that we can see, that is done by Brahma. But otherwise, it's actually been done by Krishna. But the subtle form. Does that make sense? Living entities absorbed in thoughts of it is I and it is mine are subject to the influence of this illusory potency by which they forget Krishna. But Maya never takes precedence over the Lord's incontestable authority over all things great and small. Indeed, fomenting illusion is her service to Krishna. When she comes into the presence of his purest of presences, she feels shamed by that service. Beyond illusion, the truth is that the cosmic manifestation is not a material product. It is produced from the Brahma Jyoti, like vegetation is produced from soil, with Brahma acting as a gardener. In 11th purport, Srila Prabhupada nicely sums up how the Supreme Lord empowers Brahma to serve him as a secondary creator. This, that it is coming from Brahman. Brahman then is taken as the existence potency, the sundini potency. And, I mean, that's one of the aspects. So sundini is actually what transforms in the material world what we know of as ignorance. Right? So then that would mean that is coming from Brahman means the material, the manifestation of the material potency is based on ignorance. Right? From top to bottom. Within the ignorance, then you have a touch of passion, a touch of goodness just to make it run. Because otherwise pure ignorance does nothing, right? That's called the Padan. Right? But because that desire of the living entities in time, which is action, has been put in, then the whole thing starts to work. But we can see just on its own, material existence means ignorance. It doesn't mean anything else. Right? Otherwise he would have said it's from the chit potency or from the Ladini. No, he says it's from Brahman. Mm-hmm. So that means its basis is ignorance. So how the Lord empowers Brahmaji? Lord Shri Krishna is ultimately the creator of the Brahma Jyoti, mentioned in this verse as Swaroshchita. Swaroshchisha. Or the effulgence of the transcendental body of the Lord. This Brahma Jyoti is all-pervading and all creation is made possible by its potential power. Therefore, the Vedic hymns declare that everything that exists is being sustained by the Brahma Jyoti. Sarvam kalviram brahma. Therefore, the potential seed of all creation is the Brahma Jyoti. And the same Brahma Jyoti, unlimited and unfathomed, is established by the Lord. Therefore, the Lord, Shri Krishna, is ultimately the supreme cause of all creation. Aham sarvasya prabhava. One should not expect the Lord to create like a blacksmith with a hammer and other instruments. The Lord creates by his potencies. He has his multifarious potencies, parasya shaktir vividhaya shuyate. Just as the small seed of a banyan fruit has the potency to create a big banyan tree. The Lord disseminates all varieties of seeds by his potential brahmajyoti, swarochisha. And the seeds are made to develop by the watering process of persons like Brahma. Brahma cannot create the seeds, but he can manifest the seed into a tree, just as a gardener helps plants and orchards to grow by the watering process. So, as we mentioned before, everything's coming from Brahman. Krishna is the source of Brahman, so he's the cause of all causes. Right? And here is the Lord isn't going to do the gross manifestation. He creates the seed. Right? The farmer then plants the seed and then makes it grow. Does that make sense? So that's what we can do as farmers here. We can't create seeds. Right? Men will think, I'm taking by genetics and all these different things that they're, but they're not create. They're altering a seed. But they can't create a seed. They're taking things that are already created that they can't create and combining them. Right? But that goes on anyway. It's nothing special. You know, a cook may have so many recipes, but he'll take portions from here and there and create seemingly no new recipes. But the concept of cooking, the elements of cooking, are already created way before. Does that make sense? When he offered his obeisances to Lord Vasudev, Brahma addressed him as Jagat Guru, as his first disciple in the universe. Brahma knows well that to save fallen souls from ignorance, the Lord entrusted the Vedas to him. So blessed, Brahma became the Adikavi, the first poet in the universe to sing them. Not the Jagat Guru. Now Brahma declares that everyone should understand that the Vedic hymns are intended only for the glorification of the supreme deity of the universe, Narayana. The demigods serve Narayana as the senses of his cosmic form. One who sees these devas through the eye of the Veda learns what Vishnu Bhakti is. All planets are meant to be places of his worship. Different sacrifices are meant to please him. Yoga, tapasya, and jnana are meant for ultimate salvation, which means to quit the temporary manifestation of birth and death and gain admittance to a supreme abode where the Siddha Bhaktas serve him eternally. So this is where that one para, Narayana, everything is Narayana.
Yeah.
This one. In the 15th purport, Srila Prabhupada writes, the supreme worshipable deity is Narayana. The demigods are recommended secondarily for worship in relation to Narayana. because the demigods are assisting hands in the management of the universal affairs. As the officers of a kingdom are respected due to their relation to the king, the demigods are worshipped due to their relation to the Lord. Without the Lord's relation, worship of the demigods is unauthorized. Avidhi Purvakam. Just as it is improper to water the leaves and branches of a tree without watering its root. Therefore, the demigods are also dependent on Narayana. All different kinds of sacrifice are performed just to satisfy Lord Narayana, with a view to reach him. And the best sacrifice recommended in this age of Kali is Samkirtana Yajna, the mainstay of the devotional service of a Narayana Para devotee. So all this is created only to worship Narayana. There's no other purpose. So this is what we would say the horse's mouth, right? It's that Brahma, he's the one who we know has created all this, and he says that it's actually coming from the Lord and only to be used to worship the Lord. And so anything that's in the creation can be respected, but in its relationship to the Lord. Right? So it's very clear. So with this statement, no one else can say that, oh, well, there's so many interpretations and so many understandings and all. No, here Brahma, the creator of the universe, has said this. So then it can't be otherwise taken. There is no other platform. All other viewpoints or perspectives must be seen in relationship to this statement. Brahma tells Narada that he does not really create, rather, guided by the Supersoul, he discovers Srijam Srijami, what is already created by the Lord. Prabhupada explains the word discover, Srijam, with an example of Columbus's discovery of the Western Hemisphere. Right? It means it already existed, just that he found the process by which he could realize it. Right? You get in a boat and go the wrong direction, and then you realize it. The Lord is nirguna, untouched by the modes of material nature. Yet he accepts those modes as his external energy for creating, maintaining, and destroying the material manifestation. The living entities are small offshoots of the Lord's personal nature of transcendence. The difference between their position and the Lord's is seen when they fall under the modes of material nature. Maya, as Srila Prabhupada writes in the 19th purport, is, quote, external energy manifested as if materially produced. Right? Means she herself is also Brahman. But she manifests as if she's produced materially. Right? So does that make sense? Means we call it material energy because that's the manifestation we see. It's simply external energy. Right? It's just an inferior form of the Lord's potency. But this material as we know it, that's material because that is our designation, our illusion that is put upon it. Otherwise, it's just an inferior form of the Lord's energy to be used in His service. Does that make sense? Yeah. That's why she is a person. Otherwise, if that's the way she was, then she'd be, you know, what's wrong? She could have an attitude and it's, you know, this is what I am. But she feels shamed coming before the Lord because she keeps all these living entities in illusion. Though that's her purpose. Right? So she is doing her service, but she feels bad that this is her service. Which means that to the bewildered soul, her appearance seems to have no connection to the Lord. Thus, Maya looks very attractive to the jiva desiring independence. Tempting the jiva to get involved with her, she assumes the forms of gross matter, dravya, the material knowledge, jnana, and material activities, kriya. There is a higher purpose to these three modes of Maya's appearance that the fallen jivas fail to see. Behind the three modes are three spiritually reformative purposes of creation. One, adibhuta. As the spirit soul, due to attraction to Maya, takes leave of his own nature, he is forced to accept a covering of dravya, gross matter, and become an embodied soul, jiva-bhuta. He takes birth, suffers disease and old age, and dies. under the rule of karma, he is reborn as a reaction to his first life. In turn, his second life becomes the cause of a third rebirth. The jiva bhuta's reactional rebirths multiply endlessly as long as he keeps up the will for gross sense gratification. Right? Remember, these are reformatory processes, right? Then two, adhyatma. The jiva's sense of self, atma, is transformed from spiritual to material. What forms is the cessation of spiritual activities and the start of his struggle for maintenance in a temporary existence of ignorance and suffering. This struggle initiates the jiva bhuta's karma. Of the three background purposes of creation, this one, adhyatma, is very important because the manifestation of his sense the transformation of his sense of self forces the jiva to ponder, who am I? Nimisha. Upon his surrender as a disciple, Sri Sanatana Goswami's opening questions to Lord Chaitanya were, Ke ami? Who am I? And Kena amai jare tapatrai? Why am I suffering the threefold miseries? By the plan of creation, these questions are forced upon the embodied soul. In Gita 10.32, Lord Krishna declares, Atyatma vidya vidyanam. Of sciences, I am the spiritual science of the self. Right, so these are all the... Yeah, so this we see as these three were at one... Who am I, but also why am I bothered by these three?
Yeah.
Right? So this is very essential to understanding the material creation. So, yeah, these are very... They come up many times in different forms, because these three can be... will be used in the creation also. Like that. Adidaiva, the controlling principle. Whether the soul is the surrendered servant of Sri Krishna or of Maya Devi, in any case, he is never independent. His eternal subordinate nature obliges him to serve and worship someone. After undergoing the Adhyatma, Adibhauta, and Adidaiva miseries, Nimesha, the very tapatraya Srila Sanatana Goswami spoke of, if a fortunate soul becomes intelligent, he can glimpse that he is not the body, not meant to suffer, and not independent. Right? So that's the three. Not the body, not meant to suffer, and not independent. So if we're dependent upon the Lord, we're not this body, and we're meant to serve Krishna, right? Then that's the whole philosophy. Nimisha. In 19th purport, Srila Prabhupada comments about the three ways material nature conditions the spirit soul. These are the material manifestations of cause and effect and the sense of responsibility of the conditioned actors. They are, after all, manifestations of the conditioned state. And the human being's freedom from each, from such a conditioned state, is the highest perfectional attainment. Even in the midst of material creation, the soul is never material, and neither is the Lord. While it is true that for the sake of creation, the Lord conducts material nature and enacts its laws, he is never a mundane subject visible to the living entities, created senses and minds. They are unable to approach him as long as they are unwilling to serve him in pure devotion. The Yogamaya potency acts as an impersonal curtain that seals them off from transcendence. Verses 14 to 20. Brahma now speaks of the Lord, Supreme Lord's control over the primary ingredients of creation. E.g.? What is E.g. again?
Exemplia gratia, which means for example.
For example, okay. Because I always grew up with I.E., so...
That is, id est.
Yeah, id est. Yeah. Or, what is the other one? V.I.Z., is it? Yeah. Mm. For example, Dravya, the five Mahabhutas, karma, activities, kala, time, and swabhavo jiva, the acquired natures of souls governed by maya. The source of these power ingredients is mayesho maya svaya, Bhagavatam 2.5.21. Maya, which is Lord Vasudeva's potencies, controlled by him. Oh no, maya, which is Lord Vasudeva's potencies, controlled by him. This maya, the real or original maya, is Yogamaya, who, as the Brahma Jyoti, protects the personal a spiritual realm from non-devotional vision. The resting place or pratishta of the Brahmajyoti is the transcendental form of the Lord. In this order, then, Krishna's control over the process of creation is removed, yet very real. By remote control through yoga maya to mahamaya, Vasudeva sets the primary ingredients of creation into motion. When the time comes to wind them up, the Lord alone has the authority to merge these inconceivable strong energies, gross matter, eternal time, fate, and the individual natures of the different conditioned souls, into the form of Mahavishnu, where they can continue to exist as his potencies. Nimesha, Mahavishnu, the first Purusha avatar, and the Lord's Leela of creation, is an aspect of Lord Krishna's second Vaikuntha Vyuha form, Sankarsana. The relationship of the Purusha avatars to the Chaturvyuha, you may like to compare Bhagavatam 4.24.61 and purport, plus Bhagavatam 5.17.22-23 and purport, plus Bhagavatam 6.16.27 and purport, to the verses and purports of this section of chapter 5, canto 2. Brahma goes on to speak about how, after disillusion, the creation again unfolds. The first Purusha supervises the appearance of ahamkara, or false ego, a characteristic of the ignorance of the fallen jivas. Nimesha. In purport 25, Srila Prabhupada remarks about the false ego. This means that the false ego, in the sum total form of mahatattva, is generated from the marginal potency of the Lord. And due to this false ego of lording it over the material creation, ingredients are generated for the false enjoyment of the living being. The living being is practically the dominating factor over the material elements as the enjoyer, though the background is the Supreme Lord.
Yeah, this is that point. It's a living entity that's responsible.
The living entity is responsible, yeah.
Well, but it's quite amazing that he says, this means that from the false ego, which of course refers to the jiva, in a sum total form of mahatattva, is generated from the marginal potency of the Lord. So the whole mahatattva is actually there because of
the jivas. Okay, otherwise you have pradhan, which is nothing, but as soon as the jivas are put in, then it becomes transferred to mahatattva. Also interesting, in a little bit before, where it's mentioning that it's saying that this Brahman is Yogamaya. So Yogamaya is a very interesting, I say, personality, in that she is Swarup Shakti. In other words, she is a complete form of Krishna's energy. So then, this way then, she is manifesting through one of the three. You understand? Because you have the Hladini, the Sandini, and the Samvit. Right? So, persons may come in one or the other or combination, but she's actually all three. Right? So being all three, then, for the material creation, is based on Brahman, so the Sandini. So then she works through that one, but it's still her as all three functioning. Does this make sense? Right? I mean, she functions in all these capacities, but because the material world basically functions in this based on this one, then she enters, she deals with it based on that, but it's not that her full personality won't be there in some form, but it will have the flavor of the Sandini. In other words, as Yogamaya, there's revelation. As Mahamaya, there's ignorance. Right? Both come out of the Brahman. Right? You get enlightenment from the Brahman, but at the same time, as the Sandini perverts, it becomes ignorance. So you're either covered by it, or you're enlightened by it. Right? Because it's Sandini that reveals. Right? Some of it is the knowledge, and you apply that knowledge, that's some of it, but the revelation is actually coming from Sandini. Right? That's why there's a difference between knowledge, jnana, and vijnana.
And Gita Krishna says, Naham Prakasha Sarvata Yoga Maya Samagrata Mudayam Navijanati, so forth. The mudhas, the yoga maya potency, pushes them away. So those who are devotees, she brings them in. That's why Prabhupada in one of his lectures said, those who would, you know, whose entrance into the spiritual world would cause a disturbance to the lila, they're not allowed.
They're not allowed.
They're, so that Mahamaya keeps them engaged, but say they become yogis, mystic yogis, and like that Brahma Samhita verse says, they're able to travel at the speed of mind to the Brahma Jyoti. So somehow they might start to get close, but then Yoga Maya will just push them away. You see, even though they're in the Brahma Jyoti, she acts to push them back. And then they start to think that they're God and need to have a lila, so they come back to the material world.
And perform the lila.
And that's yoga, that's Mahamaya again.
In other words, she gives you a place. Sandini means the place. It's the all-accommodating potency. So she accommodates you in the spiritual world if you're qualified, or accommodates you in the material world if you're qualified. So whichever is your nature, then she's going to give you that accommodation. So we'll end here for today. Yes, so we'll continue tomorrow. Kantaraj Srimad Bhagavatam ki, Srila Prabhupada ki, Samavita Bhaktivedanta ki, Jayanita Gaurav Vedanta ki.